A tape machine whirs and interviews with ABBA.
Do you have any stories of what was happening? Now, wait a minute, though. Before that, there was something else. There was an international award. What was that?
The Eurovision Song Contest, if that's what you mean, in 74.
Tell me that story. What was...
Is the tape running now? Or...
Yeah.
Brighton, England, April 1974.
Welcome to the 19th Eurovision Song Contest, being transmitted to no less than 32 countries.
Here we have those two guys who have this burning ambition to write songs.
I'm Bjorn.
I'm Frida.
Benny.
I'm Agnetha.
And then one of them falls in love with a beautiful blonde who happens to be the most fantastic singer. And then the other one falls in love with a redhead, beautiful as well, and a fantastic singer.
Annie Friedlingstadt of ABBA says, "We just dream a little together sometimes."
Eurovision, we were mainly in it to show ourselves, you know, to show people there is a band up in Sweden, Stockholm, that can write pop music.
Eurovision Song Contest, it has a very, very big audience, probably between 500 and 600 million viewers.
Bjorn Ulvaeus.
We had funny costumes.
They were tight. They were really tight.
And we had a song that wasn't the usual Eurovision stuff.
Oh, and it's Napoleon. No wonder the song is called Waterloo.
I don't think any one of us thought that we would win the competition. Benny might have had a feeling.
Well, I bet 100 quid on it. Good odds.
40-1. For me, that was really, really scary.
Waiting for Waterloo by ABBA for Sweden. Watch this one.
Agnetha and Frida run to the front of the stage dressed in sequin satin outfits. Bjorn plays a star-shaped guitar.
My mind, I tried to hold you back, but you were stronger. Oh, yeah. And now
Sweden, 5 votes. Sweden's way in the lead.
Sweden, they've never won it, but they've surely got to be up amongst the ranking for that one.
There's no doubt about it. The winning song of the 1974 Eurovision Song Contest, Waterloo, chanted by ABBA.
ABBA take a bow. Agnetha Feltskog.
That was a great moment, really.
But it was a strange feeling. I didn't expect to win.
Benny Andersson.
Wow, okay, we've achieved this. Now we need to start working.
A capital letter A, followed by an image of Agnetha as a baby, then as a blonde singer in her 20s, on stage. A letter B, Bjorn as a child, then as a 20-something man on stage playing guitar to a cheering crowd. A letter B over images of Benny, first as a baby, then as a bearded man in his 20s playing keyboards on stage. A letter A over an image of Frida as a little girl in a pinafore, then as a redhead singer smiling. ABBA, against the odds. A newspaper headline, ABBA grabbed the top spot.
Waterloo, the song with won last Saturday's Eurovision Song Contest by a mile. Sung by the Swedish group ABBA, Waterloo looks like being a really big seller and making a chart entry from nowhere next week.
A radio interview.
What plans have you got ahead of you now? What about conquering foreign markets?
The dream is the United States, of course. If we conquer the British market, because that's the first thing, really.
A little known fact, perhaps, is that the two of you are married.
Yes, we are.
Do the fans get jealous?
I don't think so.
No.
But you don't feel that you're literally living in each other's pockets?
Sometimes.
I don't.
Disagreement in the ranks.
The first time I met them, I was just struck by how genuine and normal they were. They were a close-knit team, you know. And Bjorn and Agnetha, they were like one.
BBC Radio 1 DJ Richard Skinner, Bjorn and Agnetha together. Stockholm, Sweden, a sign, Polar and Sweden music. ABBA's manager, a bearded man in his 40s. Hello, my name's Stikkan Andersson. I represent Polar, the only Swedish record company to reach outside Sweden's borders. Bjorn says Stikkan believed in us from the beginning. He always said, one day you'll write a world hit. That has meant a lot. In a group interview, Benny says, Stigger thought ahead about what should happen if we should win in Brighton. Bjorn adds, when we won, it was like pressing a button and everything worked all over Europe.
Take it away, ABBA.
ABBA perform on Top of the Pops. A German TV show, they're now at the top of almost all European charts, making the hit Waterloo the biggest commercial success since the Grand Prix began. In the UK top 20 charts, Waterloo's at number one.
Med andra ord, ABBA!
ABBA sing Waterloo in German on TV, wearing glittery costumes and silver boots. Driving through Paris, four Swedes have won the Eurovision with Waterloo. Since then, they've become stars. A chart shows Waterloo was number one in seven European countries. Benny says in England they thought Waterloo was quite beige, even if it was number one. If you're part of Eurovision, you're dead afterwards. Bjorn, it was like an agreement among everyone, so it was a damn uphill climb. A newspaper reports ABBA share their name with a herring company.
ABBA was seen as total outsiders. And, you know, the UK press could be mercenary. A lot of them seem to turn on the band. You know, it's a damn squid, it's going to end, tacky, plastic.
A clip of ABBA performing Ring Ring in flamboyant sequined outfits. Judd Lander of Epic Records.
On first seeing ABBA, you know, I must admit, I wasn't sold on the fashion at the time. I found it a little bit cringy seeing the outfits that they all wore. And I think the outfits were the contributor that made them look a little bit cheesy.
We weren't taken seriously, I think, because we were wearing such strange clothes. We thought we had to be more outrageous than anyone else to be seen. And then we thought it was great fun too. It was never any plan that this is going to be our image. The kitsch. We've really suffered for that.
Gliding over the streets of Stockholm, in a crowded room, a reporter holds out a microphone to Frida. Annie Fried, was this unexpected? Yeah, I think so. I couldn't dare hope otherwise.
The first Swedish reporter who came to us with a mic, he said...
Last year, you did a hit on how you ring one another. This year, you made a song about how 40,000 people were killed. Stikkan says that's a very cynical expression, because that isn't the meaning at all. It's about something that's happened in history.
It was kind of a different mass media climate in Sweden at that time. We were not popular.
In the beginning of my life in Sweden, when I was working at the Swedish Broadcast Corporation, my co-workers, they felt ABBA was too commercial, not talking about what was happening in the world.
We were the upset generation. We were upset about the apartheid system. We were upset about the military coups in Latin America.
Chile today joined the list of South American countries to fall under military rule.
20,000 people disappeared in Argentina.
We were upset about the wars in Southeast Asia. And we were upset that ABBA weren't upset.
There was a kind of progressive movement that looked upon ABBA as Antichrist.
I first heard an ABBA record because my boyfriend at that time was playing guitar with ABBA. You know, he was sitting home in our apartment trying out some new riffs. So I heard the songs in many ways.
ABBA's costume designer and makeup artist, Ding Marie Helling.
I didn't particularly listen to ABBA because I was listening to Frank Zappa and Pink Floyd and Stones and bands like that.
Customers in a record shop, then an interviewer talks to people in the street. Do you like ABBA?
ABBA.
ABBA, they're anchovies. They're too commercial. Shit. It's not your music. No. Shit. Ing Marie Helling.
Everyone thought ABBA was just a manager who decides, let's take two good-looking women, two skilled musicians, put them together and make a group that will make hits, you know, just doing this for the money.
A tax question. What has Brighton meant financially? Bjorn says it's difficult to answer still. Royalties and such from different countries comes in the long term, right? So we still haven't seen much of it.
What happens to you when you win that contest is, if you win it, you're a contest winner, and that's what you are. I mean, everybody who ever wins it, they're kind of a one shot. It took us some time in Europe to get rid of that mark.
A red light glows outside a studio.
After Waterloo, we were trying to find our identity. Were we a rock group or a pop group or something in between?
Inside a wooden cabin, Bjorn plays guitar and Benny a piano. Here is ABBA's music workshop. Don't you need at least a pen and paper when you write music? No, it's not necessary in our case. How do you do it then? What we do here is more like we create a melody that can stick in your head. And if it doesn't stay in your head, then it's not really that good. Footage of a younger, long-haired Benny playing keyboards with a group on a TV show for a teenage audience, the Hep Stars.
How did you meet Bjorn?
Well, we met on the road, actually. I was in the Hep Stars and he was playing in a folk group.
The Hootenanny Singers.
The Hootenanny Singers, yes. Mm. And we just, by coincidence, met the day before he was going to do his military services.
Did you do your military services?
Certainly I did.
Well, I should stand up a salute, sir.
The interviewer to Benny. Do you like ABBA's music? Oh, yes, and I have a lot of damn fun when we're playing it. I can't imagine doing anything else. From a close-up of Benny smiling to the four members of ABBA gathered around his piano. People Need Love, ABBA's first single in 1972.
Anna and Frieda, how did you meet Bjorn and Benny?
By that time, Frieda and I were working as solo artists in Sweden, and we had a lot of success.
I met Benny first of all in 1969, and I fell madly in love with him.
Benny smiles warmly. Frieda says, working in a dance band for 10 years isn't especially fun. The march to the top has been tough.
I remember hearing Agneta's first single on the radio. I was so in love.
Agneta rolls her eyes, then presses a hand to her face. That was the first record I ever did. I remember the feeling, that's my song, the most fantastic thing I'd ever done.
Fantastic, the way we sort of came together.
Who amongst the four of you has the final say in which track will make a single?
Frieda and I do.
Black and white film of ABBA in a recording studio. Mamma Mia, recorded March 1975.
Mostly we were standing in the studio right across each other and just singing. I've been cheated by you since I don't know where. There was so much singing. For me, it was not working, it was just fun. Look at me now, will I ever
clip of ABBA performing their hit Mamma Mia includes close-ups of Bjorn's face, then Frida's. Frida says, "You put your whole soul out there because it's fun to give it your all. It makes you happy to think how you've grown at least a little bit over the years." A close-up of the two singers' mouths.
When they were singing together, doing all the harmonies, that sound I can remember 4,000 meters distance.
Agnetha's wearing a white lace-up jumpsuit with bell-bottom flares. Frida's in a white mini dress with knee-high boots and silver trim.
Even if they sing very sad songs, together they sound somehow jubilant.
Agnetha and Frida recording vocals together.
With Mamma Mia, we found we're a pop group. We found our identity.
From the Champs-Élysées in Paris to the Victory Gate in Munich, then the group lined up in front of gold records on an office wall. Bjorn speaking German. "Hello, dear friends all around the world. We're sending you all a musical greeting titled Mamma Mia." The Swedish Royal Flag. Then at Eurovision 1974, ABBA returned to the stage after winning the contest.
In Sweden, there was almost a huge campaign against ABBA during that time. You couldn't be open about liking ABBA, and we even had to hide the records. Sweden was supposed to host the Eurovision Song Contest in 75. There were the discussions in Swedish television about not taking part in this Eurovision Song Contest, but the rules was that Sweden had won. Sweden was obliged to host the final in 75.
A protest march.
There were protests.
People was marching in the streets.
Stop the music festival. Swedish television even broadcast an alternative to Eurovision. We have a satirical song that ridiculed ABBA.
On stage, a group play guitars and sing. Here comes ABBA in clothes made of plastic, as dead as tinned herring. They also do not care about anything except to make quick cash. It burns my French nerves. Agnetha says, "I think that's something you have to take, bad criticism. They criticized us on the grounds that we don't have feeling. It's quite unpleasant." Frida says, "It's been very draining many times. I feel very overwhelmed." Benny.
Many people think that there is a formula or there is a calculation behind it. It's not. It's just the matter that Bjorn and I write the music that we enjoy most.
The group rehearsing around the piano. ABBA don't shy away from hard work. The quartet will be introducing themselves to Australia soon with their self-composed songs. Here, ABBA are rehearsing their latest song entitled Fernando. Australia.
Hello, I'm Johnny Farnham, and this is Countdown, the first edition from...
Countdown was a huge television pop show in Australia. They brought ABBA out, and it just blew this country apart.
ABBA performed the song while seated around a campfire against a starry night sky.
They played Lindblom mad and made them gigantic hits.
Benny and Bjorn both play guitars.
Just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There was a song every fucking 2 weeks. They were all over TV.
Hello, I'm Bjorn.
Hello, I'm Agnetha.
Hello, I'm Frida.
And I'm Benny.
From 75 to 76, ABBA songs were number one in Australia for 42 weeks. Nobody could ignore that.
London, autumn 76, Judd Lander, Epic Records.
We had a meeting with Peter Robinson, the head of UK and international A&R. He just literally got in some demos from Sweden. And there were a selection of tracks, but the one that stood out was Knowing Me, Knowing You.
No more carefree,
you just sat there and you went, oop, yeah, that's got to be the next track. You know, you get that feel. With that, they were now on a flow. It was working.
ABBA pose, wearing Radio 1 T-shirts, DJ Richard Skinner.
Judd Lander, he could not ignore what was happening in Australia, which was phenomenal. Knowing me,
knowing you. DJ Paul Gambaccini.
When I first heard Knowing Me, Knowing You, I just thought, oh my God, this is a number one. I can't believe it. And you just wanted to rush out into the street and tell everybody, I've just heard a future number one.
ABBA alight from a British Airways plane.
From that moment on, I just thought, well, I'm listening to every track they make.
The group is chauffeured away in a Rolls Royce.
Do you like travelling?
Car, yes.
It's very shaky about flying.
Yeah, I don't like it.
You're the happy couple. Now,
no, we are.
Are we?
We are just engaged.
You're engaged, so that's why. Walking through an empty
house, tears in my eyes. In the video, Agnetta hugs Bjorn, looking heartbroken.
After that success, did you find that the press warmed towards you? They had been a little cool, putting you down.
No, not really. They still thought that it was, you know, this commercial hit machine.
They still do, no?
They still do.
Some of them do, yeah.
The audience that buys the record, I mean, it's like telling them that they're not mature enough, that they don't know what they're buying, and they're buying something coming out of a calculated hit machine. I think that's terrible.
Benny and Bjorn, in England, your lyrics have sometimes been called simple and naive. Do you not have some ambition, the two of you, to perhaps put more profundity, more depth into your lyrics sometimes?
Yes, very much so. And if you listen to the recent lyrics, they're, you know, somewhat different from the ones before. But it seems that everybody's decided anyway that they are simple and naive, and nobody bothers to listen.
A crowded dance floor, Judd Lander.
But they didn't veer off. Regardless of the critics, they managed to come back up, bringing it all together into a 3.5 minute killer track.
Baby, baby, you're right outside. Hey, you're looking all right tonight. When you come to the party, listen to the guys. They got the look in their eyes.
We never give up until we're satisfied and we think this is as good as we can do it.
When we recorded Dancing Queen, both Frida and I, we had those ghost bumps.
I remember recording that. I really felt something very strongly for it, you know. You get the chance, you are the dancing queen.
Flying over the snow-covered streets of Stockholm in winter. Could you play something new? Indoors, Bjorn plays guitar to Benny's piano. This is the third Christmas where ABBA means more than tinned fish meatballs and tubed caviar. This is the third Christmas since Waterloo. ABBA has tinned its music in gold and silver records all over the world.
Why do you think they are that big around the world?
Okay, I'll do that now.
No, I ask.
Why do I think?
Yes.
I think it's because they're the only group that's actually giving the world good commercial pop music that means 1976. Because all the other commercial pop goes back to 1975 or 74 or 73. It's too old. These guys and the girls are really modern, and yet they're commercial as well.
Just how big are they in Great Britain, for example?
Very big. About the biggest commercial band there.
How much of a strain is that? Meaning that you're working?
Yeah.
Together, living together?
I'd say, for my personal feelings, is that there's no strain at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It's an advantage and a privilege to work together with somebody, the one you enjoy most in life. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, sometimes you come into situations where having to be together all the time can create problems.
You know, as the band's success grew, you know, the focus was always on the girls, on Agnetha and Frida, and the guys were there as the musicians, and they were seen as a backdrop more than front of house. All the producers wanted were the girls. But trying to get the band over, along with Agnetha, who didn't really want to leave her daughter in Sweden, it was a major, major problem.
That was a difficult time for me. We got our daughter in 73. So she was just 1 year old when we won in Brighton. So everything happened at the same time. But that often is like that, I think, that you start your career at the same time you want to be a mother.
When we did Waterloo in Brighton, and we were away for, I think, a fortnight or 3 weeks. And when we came back, our daughter, she didn't recognize us. That was a tough experience.
That was horrible. She was so small.
Do you find there are conflicts between being a mother and being a pop star?
I think so, really. It's a hard work, and you always get that bad conscious. Mm. She wants me, and Abba wants me, and it's very hard to do it all.
An image of Agnetha with her 3-year-old daughter, then planes taking off from an airport.
The Polish TV Studio 2 special flight of Polish Airlines is ready for boarding. The special flight expects the special guest, the pop music group ABBA.
The Polish television offered Stig Andersson and ABBA to come to Warsaw for the TV special. They were huge in Eastern Europe. ABBA cut through the Iron Curtain.
It's very difficult to get paid from an Eastern Bloc country because their currency is basically worthless. Stig Andersson, who was quite clever, he made a deal and he said, okay, we'll do this free of charge, but what you're going to do in return is make a media event out of it and everyone wins.
What does the word ABBA mean?
It's very simple. ABBA is the initials of our first name, and my name is Annie Fried.
And I am B, Benny. And I am the other B, Bjorn, and my wife is Agnetha. She's actually in Warsaw already. See, when we fly, because we have a daughter of 3.5 years old, we try to fly separately when we can.
Where are those happy days? They seem so hard to find. I tried to reach for you, but you have closed.
Agnetha.
I've been flying now for very much around the world, and I've never liked it. And now I'm very, very scared of it.
Ing-Marie Helling.
I'm sure other parents as well would resonate the same way. Both parents flying together. What if? What if?
So when you near me, darling, can't you hear me? S.O.S.
Seated together on the plane, Bjorn, Frida and Benny mime the chorus of ABBA's hit S.O.S. On the window, the name ABBA. Agnetha walks past a line of photographers up the boarding stairs. She and Bjorn hug as he steps out of the plane. Then the quartet pose together on the steps and wave for the cameras. Journalist Leif Schurman.
It was my first visit to Eastern Europe, and you could see everything was a bit more worn, a bit grey. ABBA, it was a big riot. It was a big thing.
ABBA performed Money, Money, Money on the Poland TV special in November 76.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. They need said.
Agnetha and Frida are dressed in 1920s flapper dresses with sparkly headbands.
That's too bad.
Stig Stig Anderson and his will to become this big music industry mogul clashed against the stay where you are and don't get ahead of yourself too much attitudes in Sweden. So because they were so closely tied to Stig Anderson, when people were criticizing Stig for just thinking about the money, that sort of rubbed off on their image as well. So that was a struggle for them.
So I must leave, I'll have to go to Las Vegas or Monaco and win a fortune in a game. My life will never be the same. Money, money, money must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, money, money.
Or ABBA into the millionaire bracket.
Well, you can't be that in a country like Sweden, see, when you are paying 85% in tax, 85, I repeat.
All the things I could do if I had a little money, it's a rich man's world.
I guess your hit with the super tax, Rod Stewart, left England because of their super taxes,
yeah.
Or like the Rolling Stones to France. How do you feel about paying so much to the government?
It's all right.
It's all right.
Money isn't everything.
All the things I could do if I had a little money. It's a rich man's world.
Sweden is very important for us, you know. I think everybody starts is asking us why we are living in Sweden because of the taxes and, you know. And I don't think that we can live somewhere else. It's very hard to think of that.
It's a rich man's world.
February 1977.
We're crossing live by satellite to Sweden, Stockholm. Let's meet them now. Would you give them a hand? Ladies and gentlemen, ABBA. Yeah.
ABBA appear via video link on the Don Lane show.
Did you ever envisage that you would be this immensely successful?
No. No way. I mean, we've been writing and recording for a couple of years, all the four of us. And we never expected this, really.
John and Agneta, your daughter Linda, how old is she now?
She will be 4 years tomorrow.
Does she yet realize who you are?
That's a funny
I hope
question.
She does.
Yeah.
Well,
she called me father this morning.
Did she? But let me get over to the other two. I want to ask them something personal. I've read something in a paper. You two have been engaged for 7 years.
Yeah.
Eight by now.
Are you ever going to make a move? Are you ever going to get married?
Oh, no.
Look at the look on him. Are you ready for that?
No, we are not quite sure of that, you know. We didn't get the time yet, so
oh,
really
I see.
Don't know.
Maybe another 10 or 12 years, you'll figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You never know.
Thank you. Have a little time. Okay.
Ing-Marie Halling.
Frida called me in late 76. We were friends. We did some fun things together, played badminton and were out dancing and stuff. And she asked me if I wanted to join ABBA in Australia. It was a very easy call to make.
Australia tour, 1977, a crowd at Sydney Airport. The group stepped down from the plane waving.
They were very nervous. To be perfectly honest, we didn't know ourselves whether we could cope with a tour of this form. They've been saying that, oh, they can never reproduce that sound on stage.
And you try to do something special, trying to reproduce our records with the band live. It's difficult stuff.
Crowds line the streets as ABBA are driven past.
The group's arrival in Australia has been accompanied by a blaze of publicity. While they're here, they'll perform at 11 concerts in 10 days to an estimated 140,000 people. According to the promoters, they're bigger than the Beatles, and with an entourage of 105 people, they're almost twice as big as the Rolling Stones concert. ABBA are obviously very big business.
ABBA waved from the balcony of Melbourne Town Hall to a vast crowd.
I'd like to say that this is the most fantastic reception we ever had. And, you know, we're so overwhelmed and happy that I just can't say how much. And this is really honest, you know.
Say hello, this microphone is live to the people down there. They can all hear you.
Here, down on hello, everybody. This is Frida. I really appreciate this. I love you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Agnetha.
Well, that was so enormous. The fact that so many people like what you're doing, you're very proud of it. But that was crowded, really. It affects you when it gets too much. And I could feel that when we were in Australia sometimes. Good feeling as well, but that was so enormous there. There was really fever. I think it was a little too much.
Going on tour is really exhausting. To travel every day, to change hotels, you know, never unpack your suitcases.
After a while, it's not funny anymore.
I read somewhere where you are the proud owner of an award which declares you as the lady with the most sexiest bottom. Is that true?
How can I answer to that? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Jermaine Greer, author, The Female Eunuch.
Well, it's crass, isn't it? It's rude. But what can she do about it?
A review. Her clothes were so tight, I'll never be the same.
It's completely unsurprising. They're not going to ask Agnetha about the music.
I think it was unworthy, any person. To be talked about as a body part.
Ingmarie Helling, a queue of people camped out under a grey, cloudy sky.
Heavy rain tomorrow night is now the only thing that will stop the ABBA concert from going ahead. According to showground officials, the 20,000 or so people out there should experience no real problems.
How many hours do you reckon you've been queuing for now?
32 hours?
Yep.
You reckon it's going to be worth it?
Yeah.
An outdoor stadium packed with cheering fans holding umbrellas.
They were extremely nervous. Absolutely. A little group from Sweden going to conquer the world.
The group wait backstage, wearing gold robes over their outfits, while their fans stand in the pouring rain. Frida sings a long note. Benny runs out onto the stage and casts off his robe dramatically, revealing a white top and trousers. He starts to pound out the intro to the band's opening number on the keyboards. Bjorn rushes to the other side of the stage, where his microphone's set up. Then Agnetha and Frida stride on, take center stage and launch into the song, Tiger. Frida says, when you're on the stage and doing the things you know you can do, you can dare to let go and actually be what you want to be. There's nothing more fun.
I think both Frida and I, when we were on stage, a bit competing, is good because you really do your best every evening. Much has been written that Frida and I were not friends. It's not very fair to do that. We had a lot of fun, but we also helped each other. Look into the shadows and you see the shade for me. I am behind you, I always find you. I am the tiger, tiger.
Fireworks explode above the venue, filling the night sky.
In Australia, there was a huge conglomeration of hit after hit after hit, and there was that huge peak. Does that sort of bother you, the fact that you're getting so terribly overexposed?
In a way, because it's
it's harming us now, I think. If people expect us to have five songs in the top 10 all the time, I mean, that's impossible. That's not normal.
ABBA books and toys.
Australian.
Then he says, in Australia, it was exceptional there because it had been worked up that we would come there. There was ABBA on bed sheets, ABBA on the caramels, and ABBA on everything. So when we got there, it was like the final drop. The last thing they wanted was ABBA itself.
When ABBA, the album was released in Australia, it doesn't do as well at all. So not to make too big a thing out of it, but maybe there was a bit of a worry there. Oh, this isn't a number one. Maybe this is the start of the end for us.
In London, punk rock band The Sex Pistols on a TV show.
The new craze, they tell me. They're heroes, not the nice, clean Rolling Stones. They're a group called The Sex Pistols.
Punk came along, overturning and turning its back on and spitting on all that had come before.
Go on, you've got another 5 seconds. Say something outrageous.
You dirty bastard.
Go on, again.
You dirty fucker.
What a clever boy.
What a fucking rotter.
Well, that's it for tonight. I'll be seeing you soon. I hope I'm not seeing you again. From me, though, good night.
We felt we were caught up in a revolution.
And here are John, Anna, Frida and Benny, who go together to make up ABBA. And first of all, I'd like to say welcome to Blue Peter.
Thank you very much
for coming along.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you. And Shep says hello as well.
That was the contradiction, in a way, of locating ABBA when what was prized was a certain sort of roughness. ABBA, they seem to project a relentless good cheer. That was somewhat at odds with the zeitgeist.
I try so hard to be nice.
They represented a wholeness, something high-functioning, whereas we were just teetering on the edge and falling apart.
The Sex Pistols album at number one.
By the summertime of 77, punk was in the charts. It was sometimes four or five songs in the top 10. Bands like ABBA were being squeezed out.
Teddy Darling, translator.
In 77, the Pistols manager decided to do a Scandinavian tour. I was brought up in England, but I'm Norwegian. The first thing I remember was Rodent. He was the roadie, and he was carrying a cassette player. And on the cassette player, they had one cassette, and it was... I just turned around and went, what? And they played it 24/7, all the time. Everybody, it's Rodent's job to turn it around, you know, when it got to the end.
A video of ABBA performing the song.
It's a miracle it lasted the whole tour. The Pistols, they were huge ABBA fans.
A record label can be very mercenary. It has to be to keep up with demand. And with an ever-changing musical scene, there was a little panic in the camp. Do we carry on with the band? Do we call it a day? That inevitably comes along.
Having to come up with new songs all the time, isn't that very difficult? Don't you feel enormous pressure?
Yeah, we do. We feel that we have to come up with something different. So many people have been talking about the equivalent to the Sgt. Pepper album, you know, when the Beatles came up. And it puts a lot of pressure on us, sure.
On Australian radio, December 1977.
Benny and Bjorn are with me. Anna is, what, due a couple of days?
Yes, yes. Mm. She's fine, but a bit tired of waiting.
Yeah, after 9 months, no wonder. No. What are you hoping for, a boy or a girl?
A dog.
Don't tell Anna. No smiles, not a single word at the breakfast table. Though I would have liked to begin.
So much that I want to say, but I feel unable.
like you've done many times before. And I cry and I feel so helpless.
People have read a lot into various lyrics, and of course there is some of that in the lyrics, but most is fiction.
But the emotions are there. Yeah.
1978 was a strange period. Bjorn and Agnetar's marriage is not going so well. And in the midst of all this, Benny and Frida get married.
I cling to a desperate hope and I cry and I feel like dying. Two friends and two true lovers. Somehow we'll help each other through the hard times. No, you won't. And you don't.
Well, I think what men mistake for happiness was, in fact, resignation and patience.
Depends what you're in the relationship for, I guess. I mean, it's always got to be worth staying, but it might be unbearable. Daydreams are the better life, but I have to wake up. The sound of a key in the door. The lyrics, they're talking about very serious, you know, pains of the heart. Within them, they did have really mature reflections on their relationships. In talking about things like separation, they were in the flow of what was going on socially.
Women's rights marches.
It was a huge thing. People were not getting divorced.
In Paris, an interviewer, Benny, speak French for me. Oh, no, I don't speak French.
Are you afraid by the future? Qui veut répondre? You want to answer, Benny?
Apparently, you're not anxious on a professional level. If I were you, I'd be afraid to see my two wives fly away.
You are not afraid someone might steal your wives?
It's not up to us, it's up to them, isn't it?
Yes, of course. A plane coming into land, then the Hollywood sign on the hills. Los Angeles, USA, May 1978. Traffic moving along a busy highway, then a giant billboard with ABBA's name and image. ABBA in huge print on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. It's a huge venture ABBA's begun in America. What will create the breakthrough is ABBA's participation in the big star Olivia Newton-John's TV show. It's one of America's biggest TV shows.
We know them as the biggest artists in the world since the Beatles, except in the United States.
Speaking of Olivia Newton-John, I was told that before being as noticed in America, you were quite popular in Australia. Is that so?
Well, yeah.
Good. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, I'd say the only territory where we don't sell records is here. Otherwise, they buy the records all over the world.
There's a million invested and a huge ad campaign happening. Radio stations, TV companies, press and weekly magazines are arranged. Frida says people have forgotten this money that is written so much about would never have come if the creative side hadn't existed. Anita adds, we have feelings and we get hurt if we get jumped on every time and there's only talk about money because we're proud of what we do. That's what we want to talk about, not money. Stars and money go together, however, and the money is already rolling in.
It seemed impossible to make ABBA as big in America as they were everywhere else. I mean, they were doing fine. They had a number one hit with Dancing Queen, but it wasn't as successful.
At this time when ABBA are coming up, the measure of credibility in popular music is pretty much guitar rock. They didn't look like other rock stars. And then also, I mean, just even the sound of the women's voices, I mean, that kind of thin, high pitch is almost like Alvin and the Chipmunks or something. It sounds like a record that's being played too quickly. They knew that there was resistance to them from a magazine like Rolling Stone.
Well, that's some great songs. I know one you could start off with your voice.
You want to do that?
You can't, you can do that. It's good.
With Olivia Newton-John on her TV show.
Ba 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 ba.
ABBA, Olivia and singer Andy Gibb sit in a circle on stage with an audience around them.
Looking for a man, saw Barbara Ann, so I thought I'd take a chance. Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann, Barbara Ann. Since I'm on my round, rocking at a roll, rocking at a really Barbara Ann. How come you're doing the high part and I'm doing the low part?
It's an opera.
Huh?
You sing some opera.
No, actually, I don't know many songs, you know, in just a few.
Yeah,
just give us a few bars.
Yeah, I've got a good upper voice.
Huh?
Sing some scales.
Double the notes. The one you're rehearsing.
The one you've been rehearsing for a week now.
That's not fair.
Frida takes a breath. Nile Rodgers of Chic.
There was an interesting connection. Chic and ABBA were signed to the same label at the same time. And I thought that just like my band Chic, their songs and their sound is uniquely theirs. You have to understand that people have different roots. They're Swedish. They're not from California or New Orleans or whatever. They have a culture that is uniquely theirs.
It's very difficult to say exactly what ABBA is, as we've been exposed to the American music scene, the English, the Swedish folk music scene, to the Italian, German, French. There are a lot of styles, a lot of different traditions that we now and then like to try.
It must be very difficult to say. On average, how long does it take for you to write a song?
That's impossible to answer. Sometimes, you know, it takes you a week and there's no song at all, or 2 weeks. And sometimes it takes 4 hours and there is almost a complete song there. Let's say it has taken us a year for each album.
An interviewer to Frida, when's the next LP record coming out? Frida says, I'm wondering that too. We're working on it, but it's going very slowly. It's terribly difficult because it requires time to write new material. Can you hum a bit of the chorus of a song on the coming album? Frida opens her mouth, then hesitates. I don't know if I should. You caught me off guard. No, I think I'll save it. The kids will have to wait until our LP comes out instead. That'll probably be more exciting. London, December 1977. A Christmas tree hung with glowing lights. Judd Lander of Epic Records.
I get this call from head of entertainment at the BBC. Hi, Judd. Listen, we need ABBA. We're doing a Christmas special. We'd love ABBA to come.
The Mike Yarwood Christmas Show, a spoof of the Generation Game with ABBA as the contestants.
Well, are they lovely? No, see, that's applause. It just shows you how lovely you are. And just check your details. He seems like a nice boy, doesn't he?
Bjorn cracks up.
Which one are you?
I'm Bjorn.
Bjorn? Now, yes. That's a very popular name for babies in Sweden, isn't it?
Yeah, they say there's one Bjorn every minute.
He's going to be trouble, isn't he? See that.
This was one of the big major Christmas shows, a show called The Mike Yarwood Show. He was a showbiz impersonator, comedian, and highly respected entertainer with the biggest viewership at the time in the UK.
They're one of the world's most popular singing groups, and I love them. I know you love them. Millions do. ABBA.
ABBA perform Thank You for the Music.
I'm nothing special. In fact, I'm a bit of a bore. If I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing.
After dark, traffic moves through the rainy streets of central London.
I'm so grateful.
We arrived at the hotel, all marched up to the suites, and I say goodnight. And there's Agnetta on her own. And I saw her going into her own suite. A slight loneliness was showing on her face. You know, this sort of... It was sad, actually.
Carl Magnus Palm, author of ABBA, Bright Lights, Dark Shadows.
That television special actually aired on Christmas Day in the UK. So while the British public were sitting in front of this big television special and enjoying ABBA and seeing them as a happy group of two happy couples, the reality of it was that on that very same day, Agnetta took the kids and moved out.
A newspaper headline reads, "The End of Love" by ABBA Blonde. Bjorn.
The marriage didn't work, but we still worked very well together as musicians and artists. So we decided to split up the marriage, but not split up ABBA.
Divorced, but still a hit together.
I think that wasn't brave of us. But we were in the middle of something, and there were no hard feelings. And we knew, all of us, that this is our way to succeed. We want to follow, to do this and to continue, even if there were some hard times. I don't want to put the blame on ABBA. So, I mean, we are growing apart sometimes, and you can't do anything about it.
An image of Bjorn and Agnetta seated side by side but looking away from each other. 3 weeks later, New York, January 1979.
Coming up next from the General Assembly of the United Nations, the Concert of the Year, A Gift of Song, the Music for UNICEF concert.
On a stage, ABBA perform beneath pale purple lights.
UNICEF needed to raise money for its children's charities around the world.
I'm sure that you can cry on.
The artists donated royalties for a song, and UNICEF got it all.
I see you broken desert.
Here I am sitting in the United Nations, and ABBA rising into view on a turntable. And it was cool.
Chiquitita was an enormous multi-million seller around the world and raised millions of dollars for projects in Latin America and Southeast Asia, among other places.
I wonder if we can move on very quickly, in fact, to the success, the great success story of Chiquitita, which, as well as being a number two hit in Britain, Rita, has now proved to be your biggest success in Spanish-speaking territories. There's a wee bit of a story behind how and why that happened, isn't there?
We felt that it would be nice to do it in Spanish because it's very much a Spanish song. I mean, in the
sort of reminiscent
style
of Fernando as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is in a way. So we called a Spanish teacher to teach us how to pronounce the words and the lyrics in Spanish. I think it went out very well.
One day, good dog, my name is Stikkan Andersson, and I have a small pop group, and I want a Spanish coach. A small group. Stikkan Andersson was very enthusiastic about taking ABBA in Spanish to South America because with so many people, commercial, it makes sense. I call my sister in Argentina. She was like crazy. No lo puedo creer.
I can't believe it. Yes, believe me.
Créelo, créelo.
Chiquitita, tell me why. You're enchained by your suffering.
It could be someone with suffering of love, but I have to be very honest, darling.
In your eyes, there is shadow of your great sorrow.
For me, it's a song about solidarity.
A protest march.
When you have difficult political times, like the military dictatorship in Argentina or somewhere, you anyhow are a human being, a person. You want some minutes of happiness.
Chiquitita, you can confide in me as you cry on my shoulder. Protesters shout, "We want our children." You can lean on me so you can carry on.
And I am convinced
art gives you solace. You are always sure of yourself. And now your wing is broken.
When Agneta was singing, it was such an emotion because of the word in Spanish for me.
Let me help you. I want to see it healed. Chiquitita, you know it well, but sorrows come and go, and they disappear. You will dance again, and will be happy, just as flowers bloom.
For me, it was magic. It was magic.
I want to share your happiness, Chiquitita.
In a way, ABBA was political. When they were collecting money for UNICEF, that is political. What they were not doing was, they were subtle. They have bigger visions of solidarity.
That subtlety touches your heart. That's what they did. It wasn't just Dancing Queen. Translator Ana Martinez del Valle. Agneta on stage looking elegant, then recording in the studio, her face strained. An image of her singing in a studio, seated beside Bjorn, who's playing guitar. Newspaper headlines. ABBA's love crisis. Success spoiled our private lives.
What about the sort of family life now in ABBA? You're getting an awful lot of publicity on various lines, actually, of the family life. Has it in any way caused any problem professionally? You know, is it difficult at all? Columns that have...
When you are a person that everybody knows, you have to take that. You know that they are going to write about it, and you have to take it.
Yeah.
Well, so we don't look at the papers too much ourselves.
Yeah.
Newspaper story. Agnetta pleads, "Stop spreading lies." A headline, "Can ABBA survive?" DJ Richard Skinner.
They were professionally still working very well together, but particularly Agnetta clearly didn't want to be there. She was very professional. She turned up for the interviews. She had the pictures taken, but clearly just didn't enjoy being there anymore.
May 1979, Richard Skinner interviews ABBA.
I've got something for you.
This is Richard Skinner with a Radio 1 exclusive. As Benny.
Hello, Richard.
Hi. Bjorn.
Hello.
Agnetta.
Hi, everybody.
And Frida.
Hello.
Hi, of ABBA. Talk to us about their latest album, Voulez-Vous, and we play tracks from the album. Interestingly, it's a sort of disco-funk sound on that title track, Bjorn, and in a way it sums up the album. It's a new move for the group, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's what we feel ourselves.
A video of ABBA dressed in shiny satin outfits, performing the song in a nightclub setting to a packed dance floor. Paul Gambaccini.
When I first heard the album, I thought, oh, they've peaked. It seemed to gesture to disco too much. Now, who am I to say they shouldn't have made a disco record, because disco was so big.
Nile Rodgers of Chic.
I grew up in the era of discos and dancing. The Latino, the Asian, the Black, the queer community, the music brought us all together.
People of different races fill a dance floor.
No matter how much it morphs, this is the whole American vibe that comes from soul music.
Everybody made a disco record. And so ABBA delved into disco.
A video of ABBA recording in the studio. Benny, wearing headphones, plays keyboards while the girls sing into the same microphone.
It was a successful disco record. I mean, there's no doubting it. Gay discos, particularly because, of course, of the title, Gimme, Gimme, Gimme a Man After Midnight. So, needless to say, when the clock struck 12:01, but it turns out the timing was terrible.
50,000 people, the largest crowd of the season, showed up at Chicago's Comiskey Park for the twi-night doubleheader between the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers. 15,000 others had to be turned away. Many had come for Disco Demolition Night, a promotional gimmick. Between games, as planned, a huge box containing thousands of disco records was blown up.
A series of small explosions start fires burning on the sports field.
The rest was unplanned. Fans stormed out onto the field in the thousands. Disco records were hurled like frisbees. Bonfires were set. Bottles were thrown.
A banner, death to disco, then a shattered vinyl record.
Disco sucks, we can now clearly see, was basically a racist and homophobic reaction from rock fans. A lot of radio stations stopped playing disco. Disco died almost overnight.
Rolling Stone magazine writer Jim Ferber.
ABBA was bringing in a lot of disco elements into their music at just the moment when disco was publicly demonized. This album wasn't going to make it easy for them to break America.
ABBA, Sweden's greatest export, on their very first American tour. ABBA, the concert.
This was going to be their first North American tour. It opened in Edmonton, of all places, which is quite far north in Canada. Rolling Stone flew me up there to interview them.
A rush of photographers met ABBA at the airport. Journalists in from around the world chasing the elusive public image of ABBA.
We've done a lot of television and radio and interviews and all that without touring, doing live performances. Not being available here in North America is definitely a disadvantage. We're here to try to change that.
September 1979.
They're very unassuming, but clearly the tour was important for them. The truck drivers and the people at the airport and the people who worked in the hotels, they all seemed to love ABBA, but they were not that big in America then. We were playing in small places, not huge arenas.
Well, Benny, ABBA seemed to be an entire unit to themselves. You record your own records, you write your own material, you promote your own stuff. Is there not a danger that there could be a certain sameness about the whole thing?
1979, tour lighting director Patrick Woodruff.
I'm sure that they felt they weren't being taken seriously as music people. In the hotel, when I interviewed them, Bjorn had said, it may be pop music to you, but it's soul to us. The men did the interviews, the women were not part of it, and I remember getting the sense at that time that the women were less enthused about going on tour.
Ing-Marie Helling.
It was a hardcore tour. There was a lot of back-to-backs and a lot of traveling. A lot of practice.
Frieda and Danietta warm up backstage.
They were quite thorough in their work.
Technicians unpack cables from a crate.
You would always hear Frieda and Agnetta singing backstage. And that was always interspersed with laughter. And I remember saying to Frieda, oh, it's been so great, the tour's been so great and everything, and it's so great to see you, and you guys, you're just all so happy together. And she said, it's not quite what it seems, Patrick.
From a group rehearsing with backing musicians on stage to a bus driving along a highway. On board the bus, Agnetta is seated alone, looking weary, wearing headphones and holding a hot drink in one hand. Around a curve in the highway, San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge in the distance. A plane zooming across an orange sky, then Frieda in a corridor, wearing a poncho dress. On stage, Bjorn joins in lead vocals on Summer Night City.
The response from the audience was not as it was in Australia. I'm not sure that we did sell out all concerts. But, you know, American audiences, it's not easy to please.
A review, ABBA, You're in Trouble. Seattle concert wasn't a sellout and its performance shows why.
They were really struggling and fighting to do a good tour and to break in America. That was the sole purpose.
Carl Magnus Palm.
For Agnetta, that part of the tour was really difficult. She was fairly newly divorced. She felt alone. She hated flying.
A TV weather report.
Tornado, October 3rd.
We've got many reports of tornadoes on the ground, funnels, and quite a bit of damage. Some winds estimated in excess of 100 miles per hour. Can't stress enough, you should take immediate safety precautions.
I don't like to fly. On our tour, I think we flew from New York to Boston. We were up in the air for 1.5 years, I almost said. 1.5 hours with this terrible weather. They tried to take us down, but we couldn't land because the airport was blown away. That was really, really scary moments for us. And we were all four in the plane.
More than 400 people hurt, one man killed by the storm. Damage extensive, expected to run into the millions of dollars.
After that, I got sick. My whole body was sick. That was some hard times, really. We came to a point when I said that I can't do this. We have to have some kind of limit.
Touring, it takes too much away from the creativity that is essential to write songs. Of course, it's fun to be on stage, facing the audience and all that. That's only 2 hours a day. The other 22 hours is just struggling, getting from place to place.
Super trooper beams are gonna blind me, but I won't feel blue.
A British Airways plane in flight.
For almost every artist, America is a way to break it worldwide. We've done it worldwide without America.
We can live without it.
Oh.
So it doesn't mean life or death,
no.
On a plane, Benny seated opposite Bjorn, who's engrossed in a book. Agnetha sitting by herself reading a magazine while Frida, wearing shades, is resting her head on a cushion and a paper bag. Now the members of ABBA are walking along carrying bags. A crowd's gathered in an urban street, waving and cheering. A smiling Frida walks through an entrance into a hotel reception area. A giant poster with ABBA's smiling faces, then they're in a car being driven through London. At the gates of BBC Television Centre, an interviewer talks to a group of teenage girls, then Bjorn and Benny are interviewed on a TV show.
At the gates of the BBC, where there's a lot of expecting fans hoping to catch a glimpse of their favourite pop group, ABBA. You're obviously all ardent fans and willing to stand around for quite some time.
Of course, we'd do anything for them.
Right. Tell me something, we are girlless this morning. Where are the ladies?
We've been working so hard lately, you know, that they're simply too tired to come.
We've been having
like 38 gigs in a row.
How are you standing up to?
Well, we're not really.
Judd Lander.
America was weird, but when they came back to the UK, things couldn't have been more different.
Wembley Stadium in 1979 with its twin towers, then a poster, ABBA in concert. Through a car window, a crowd waving.
Wembley, it was like a mega event. It was like pop royalty had come to town.
London City Lights after dark. Frida.
Is it car to go?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Good.
Frida snuggles down in her car seat and Agnetha chuckles.
When I heard that they sold out six concerts and they could have sold out six more or 15 more, I was a bit shocked because there's very few bands that can do that.
It also attracted the critics. The irony was that you'd have high-end music journalists who'd already criticized them all, but suddenly they wanted that VIP ticket. And I'd wind them up saying, but I thought you didn't like the band.
In a dressing room, the girls, wearing striking white and blue stage costumes, put the finishing touches to their makeup. Then they do warm-up vocal exercises. The group walk along a darkened passage towards the Wembley stage.
As soon as they came out,
a sea of cheering fans.
There was a roar that you would not believe.
On stage, Agnetha and Frida stand together, their arms outstretched in the shadows. Then the lights go up and they start dancing and clapping to the beat. Bjorn runs forward, smiling at the audience. Then Agnetha tosses her hair and gazes seductively. Fans in the front rows clap and beam up at the group.
Everybody wanted to go to the show. It's the who's who of showbiz wanted to go. Remember, the VIP area at Wembley on the left was chocker. And some of the VIPs, like Zeppelin, The Who.
We were really surprised to see that these guys were coming to see ABBA. That was a thrill, actually, that we would have a following with our heroes.
One of the most flattering things I've heard in my life was I ran into Pete Townsend, and he says, "Do you know SOS is the best pop song ever written?" I'm so proud.
As they finish a song, Bjorn throws his arm up. The group on stage against a backdrop with the ABBA logo in flashing lights, then the crowd cheering. Bjorn takes the mic.
Hello, everybody. It's now 3 years ago since we were in London and played the last time. It's far too long. It really feels good to be back, I can tell you that.
Benny's holding an accordion.
It's been tough in many ways, but it's been very rewarding because we've showed our critics, audiences, as well as ourselves, we can make it live.
That confidence was there the whole time. It was there from the tour 77. When you do something that you can stand up for, then you have the confidence. Because no one can touch you. They can say, this is crap. Yeah, fine, but I love it. The difference now was that they could share the confidence with the audience. They were quite proud of what they had achieved.
The four members of ABBA stand in a line at the front of the stage, Benny playing accordion.
You and I can share the silence, finding comfort together, the way all friends do. And after fights and words of violence, we'll make up with each other.
Flying over the snow-flecked streets of Stockholm in 1980, Bjorn.
One thing we'd learned was that everything starts with a song. I think great music is created from the human experience. Deep emotions.
ABBA in their 20s.
Writing a lyric is something in between a poem and a melody. It would conjure up not only a mood, but like images sometimes in me, almost cinematic.
London in winter with wet roads and snow-covered landmarks, Big Ben and Trafalgar Square. Judd Lander.
Peter, the head of UK and international A&R, called me up. New tracks had come along. The business is a very cynical business. You know, you've got executives there who all they're interested in is the next dollar. But when we were listening to that track, there was a silence there. We all knew what it was all about.
ABBA's 1980 ballad, The Winner Takes It All, Bjorn.
I first presented the lyrics one morning in our studio, and we had this fantastic backing track.
I don't wanna talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I played all my cards.
I'm a very much feeling person, and I really try to put my life experience and my feelings, everything, in the song.
The winner takes it all, the loser standing small.
Going through a divorce is difficult, as anyone would know who's done it. That was, of course, taking up my thoughts.
An image of a younger, smiling Bjorn and Agnetha on their wedding day. Then Agnetha in the video, sitting alone, gazing into the distance, looking sorrowful.
Building me a fence.
But there was not one winner in the case of us.
Images of them as a couple, locking eyes and smiling.
That was powerful. You know, one of our best, I think.
It's really honest.
Frida says it wasn't just the music, it was also love. It was a life lived together, somehow, all four of us.
I think he was writing about all the four of us.
ABBA pictured together the two couples smiling happily.
The Super Trooper album, I think, turned everything around, getting the sales and finally getting some brilliant reviews.
An interviewer to Bjorn and Frida. To many people's surprise, you've received almost unanimous positive critiques in Sweden for the latest LP. What's happened? Bjorn says, no, there must be something wrong.
Everybody is happy with it. In Holland, it's already a golden album. You must be rich, but are you happy too?
Sometimes, sometimes not.
As other people.
Yeah.
Life goes up and down, I think.
A newspaper headline reads, Second Divorce. It's another of ABBA's greatest splits. Frida says, everyone goes through some crisis. What am I doing? What do I want with my life? You have to reassess your life.
I don't want to talk. We could feel that it suddenly had got a bit heavy. It was not so fun anymore to record, and it was something in the atmosphere. A bit tragic.
The winner takes it all.
Black and white images of ABBA recording, then performing, then posing together as a quartet. Bjorn.
We had a very explosive and creative period. We organically came together gradually, and then it happened, and then it stopped.
A tape machine's turned off.
That's fascinating, that story. That is dramatic. Okay, Waterloo. Why did you decide to try out at the Eurovision? What's the actual title?
Eurovision Song Contest. You know, you have to realize that at that time, it was virtually the only thing that could help you get outside the borders of Sweden. You know, nobody would listen to a tape from Sweden at that time.
We had to prove that we were different. We had to fight our way. We just started working really, really hard.
Since their debut at Eurovision in 1974, ABBA have sold over 385 million records.